Listening Dog Media.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Offside Rule. Promoting women's football since 2013.
On the Offside Rule, our special guest is Phil O'Connor, a freelance journalist who has an area of expertise that you'll be confused to hear about when you hear him talk. But I'll let Phil do the introductions. So, Phil, where are you living right now? How do we know each other? And what's your area of expertise, please?
Right. So right now, Lizzie, I'm coming from you to you from my bunker in central Stockholm, where I've lived for the last 25 years. Now, I haven't lived in the bunker all that time, but I've lived here in Sweden all that time. You and I met back when the Euros were in England. And was it 2021 or thereabouts, I think, post-COVID, the one that was postponed. And you were working for UEFA, I think, with the England team, and I was working with the Norway team. Because remarkably enough, for an old man with a grey beard like me, my area of expertise, if you will, is Scandinavian women's football. In particular, Norway and Sweden. And for some reason, you thought that the listeners to the Offside Rule podcast would be delighted to hear about that. And I am delighted that they will be, because here I am.
Absolutely. And the reason being is that Scandinavian football, we only have to look at the Champions League this season ahead of the quarterfinals to see two Scandinavian teams in there to know that we should be speaking to you, Phil. We should be getting the lowdown and to know more. Now, Tash and I have already had a debate as to whether it's Häcken or Häcken, but you'll be able to tell us about that team and how we pronounce with the umlaut over the top.
Yes. So it's usually pronounced Häcken in Swedish, right? Okay. It has two meanings. One is the butt or your bum, and the other is a hedge. So I've really no idea where the thing came from, but they are sort of Gothenburg's second club, if you like. Gothenburg likes to see itself as Sweden's first city, but it's actually been second city over there in the west coast. They call it the best coast. And Häcken basically took over Copa Göteborg a few years ago. I don't know if you remember, there was a remarkable situation when the team won the Damallsvenskan, and then 3 or 4 days later, the crowd behind him were financially went, well, that's enough now, we're going to pull the plug on this. And the whole club just said, what's happening here? Wow. And it was taken over then by Häcken, who've had a great history in the men's game, a great club for punching above its weight, but they also have really sound values. They're just the nicest people you could meet. And when they came up with the idea then of, okay, we can't let the champions of the Damallsvenskan just go to the wall, as has happened in the past. We saw Tyresö FF many years ago making the Champions League final and then getting weighed down by their debts there. So basically Häcken came in, took over the club, took over the players and their contracts, and have done great work ever since. So they're out there now on Hisingen, and I'm actually going to be down at the game for UEFA now on Wednesday night, and I can't wait. I've been lucky enough to go to some of the group games as well, and what they're doing down there is absolutely amazing. It's incredible to see them and SK Brann over in Norway there. For many years, Scandinavian clubs would have been, you know, you would have looked at Scandinavian clubs as being among the best, if not the best in the world, and then they fell away because, you know, the Women's Super League in England caught up, Italy is catching up, Spain came out of nowhere to catch up, and that kind of thing. So they've really been under threat. But this year, with two quarterfinalists, I think Scandinavian football, or women's football certainly, is coming roaring back.
It's interesting, actually, because Häcken, I look at the roster, and between them and Bran from Norway. I would have thought that Häcken are more of the surprise outfit for you to be in the quarterfinals. And you've already described them as a club that can punch above their weight. Would that sort of sum it up? Has it been a surprise over there?
I don't think it's been a surprise in total. If you watch them every week, they're a really well-coached team. And the same goes for Bran, right? But they've got that sort of mix. They have some really well-established internationals. Aylan Rubinson has just left to go to the Houston Dash in America. Tremendous footballer. And for the young players who are coming in, like Rosa Kafaji, who's playing up front for them, to come in and play alongside her. The goalkeeper, Jennifer Falk, is another fantastically experienced international, has been around for so long now. And they've really, in Häcken, they've hit that mix of bringing in established internationals and experienced players and giving young players the chance to shine. And if you look at the Champions League games, Linz, they've come in and in certain cases, the younger players have kind of looked like rabbits caught in the headlights, you know, against Real Madrid, against Paris and that kind of thing. But they've recovered. They haven't really been as badly punished for their mistakes as maybe they might have been playing against a Barcelona. And that has been hugely valuable for those players. But I have to say that tactically, they're way ahead of where they've been in recent years. So they know what they want to do. A lot of Scandinavian teams, because they don't have maybe the quality that a top French team or German team might have, they look to play on the counter. But it's not just, okay, we're going to win the ball and then we're going to play on the counter. You have to decide where you're going to play. You have to decide the tempo you're going to play at. There's no point in just hoofing a ball up to somebody if they can't control it with their back to goal and let the rest of the team come up. So they've looked really, really good tactically in terms of how they go in the counter attack. It's still very, very quick. It's still very, very direct, but it's much more controlled than just launching the ball forward, which is where I think that, you know, Scandinavian teams maybe fell down for a few years.
I'm really interested with regards to, obviously I played in both countries, in Sweden and in Norway, and loved my time playing in Scandinavia. You know, just great leagues, the girls were great, the lifestyle was incredible. But I do feel as if potentially when I was playing in the countries at the start, and even at Everton when I played in Champions League against the likes of your Roers or your Linköpings with your Pernille Harders or your Malmos with your Martyrs, you had big superstar names over in Sweden, more particularly than maybe Norway. I kind of feel like now I see them as maybe feeder clubs. Do you feel like that as well? Or do you think they could be a powerhouse league again where maybe big names will want to go back? Or do you see really those leagues as stepping stones for players now?
I think they're undoubtedly stepping stones at the moment, Tash. If you remember when you played over here, very few players apart from your good self in your setup would have been full time, right? You might have had maybe two or three girls if you're lucky. But other than that, you're training at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 6 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not the way it is anymore. There are still part-time players there. There's still people who are studying in that. But it's a much more professional setup. And Häcken have that as well. Now, they're currently in the situation where I see a development soon where the WSL and the various other leagues just going to pay more money than what Sweden ever can, and then they're definitely going to be a feeder league. But it is finding that balance, because as yet you're not talking about life-changing money, right? Every girl who will play for Häcken now on Wednesday night is likely going to have to get a job after football. That's just the way it is. I remember Nilla Fischer, who played at Linköping years ago and who played for Wolfsburg in Germany, she said to me that if she'd played for the men's team in Wolfsburg, they earned more in a week than she did in a year. And unfortunately, that's still the situation. But until then, as long as you can find a situation where Hedvig Lindahl will come back from Atletico Madrid for family reasons, play for you, Gordon, here, maybe pick up another club along the way as a reserve keeper. As long as people are still making those decisions based on the finances that are available to them, I think they'll be there or thereabouts. But the real task now is to do what Hammarby are doing, for instance, in Stockholm, right? It's bringing back Jonna Andersson from Chelsea, but also bringing through young players. They've taken in Yuli Blackstad now from Manchester City, who unfortunately things didn't really work out for Yuli for a variety of reasons. I think she's one of the most talented players I've ever seen in Scandinavia. Just didn't work out for her. There's too much competition, needs the game time. She's got twice in the cup here over the weekend, and she's looking absolutely brilliant, you know. So I do think that, you know, I feel like rehabilitation projects, they will end up here as well. They'll end up coming on loan, which Yuli did last year. She went to Häcken, played the cup final, lost to Hammarby, who she's now signed with. So I think there's a lot to be said for Scandinavia, because as you well know, Natasha, the structures here are really good. The coaching is really good. Diet is good. Recuperation is good. All of those things are good. So there's no reason why they won't be able to compete. Will they be able to win the Champions League in the future? Probably not. Will they be able to have an influence on who does win? I definitely think so.
And then that brings us on to brand. So from a Norway point of view, they've got Barcelona this week. I don't want us to date the show too much, Phil, by talking about that as a preview, because some people might be listening to this next week. But in terms of players that you think might step up to that challenge, who for them would you say are the ones to watch?
I think they've been really, really smart in terms of they're kind of, you know, the Barcelona of Norway now, because they've taken in so many fantastic players. Amalia Ekeland, who used to play for Reading, she's there, played up front in the last group game. First time in her life, played out of her skin. It was unbelievable. I've never seen that like it, because when I saw the team sheet, it was going, is this a mistake? Has somebody printed this wrong? You have her, you have Andrine Hegerberg is there as well. Cecilia Reddish-Kvamme, who played for West Ham, she's there as well. Marit Bratberg-Lund, who I thought should have played at left back in the World Cup and was subsequently proved right. Nobody's got a question beyond that, but I definitely was. But the one really to keep an eye out for there is their number 16, Signe Gaupset, who's playing it as a sort of an offensive midfielder there. An incredible footballer. If, like, I've been talking about Julie Blackstone now for 2 or 3 years as being one of the best that I've ever seen coming out of Scandinavia, but Signe is just incredible. She has absolutely everything. She has the physicality, plays with her head up, has the skill to execute what she wants to execute. Really, really tremendous footballer. I don't think she's going to be in Scandinavian football for very long. I think to come maybe midsummer here, and she's going to be picked up by one of the top clubs, probably in the Women's Super League, but, you know, could be any of the top leagues. But they've been really, really good in terms of bringing in very, very experienced players and creating a spine. Aurora Mikkelsen and goal there as well, who you remember from her time in England, you know. So they're doing everything right there, and again they're bringing through these younger players and they're giving them the chance to thrive there. So it's actually looking very positive. Now the only question is if the other clubs in the competition in Norway, like Rosenborg and those kind of teams, if they can keep up with what it is that Brann are doing.
Well, I also, for Tash's benefit, because if you ever listen to the show, Phil, you'll know that she doesn't tend to talk about the defenders as much. Although you did last week, Tash. But I was going to talk about Sara Ritter as well. She, in that back line for Brann, has been... You know when there's a player that just looks like they stand no messing? I think that's what it is with her. I think I'd be a bit scared. But yeah, I'm sure from a point of view of the national teams as well, Phil, that getting to the quarterfinals of a Champions League is brilliant for both Norway and Sweden. So going into the next majors, how do you think the teams are equipped? Because we joked before we started this that the last time you saw me, Norway had been beaten 8-0 by England. And I don't mind reminding everyone about that, but I don't think it's going to happen again.
No, I don't think so. I mean, Norway and Sweden are two very different countries internationally when they play football. And it's to do with the sort of the vibes around the team, right? So that night when Norway were beat 8-0 by England, nobody else even came close to that. A record number of goals in the European Championships, let it be said, you know? But they're two hugely different sort of footballing cultures. Peter Gerhardsson, who's the head coach of the Swedish national team, remember him saying to me, he doesn't have this attitude that they can win every game because it's football. Wild things happen in football. And he's going, we're going to go out there, we're going to do our best to win every game, but I'm not dumb enough to think that we're going to do that. Now, Norway went through this really weird period after that game when they lose 8-0. And I remember we were down in the tunnel after that game and Odda Hegerberg was sort of waving at me going, I want to come to you to do an interview because this is not okay. And we were doing the flash zone interviews and you always think, will we even get the big players in that situation? But Odda Hegerberg, I've described her and Kobe Bryant are the two biggest winners I've ever met in my life. And she wanted to come on that microphone after the game and send a message to people, right? That message
You got more interviews than me.
Unbelievably so. The players, but the players you were trying to interview, they were too busy celebrating, you know, so we would have had ABBA in the background and Cher in the background.
ABBA in the background.
For most of that, you know. But but the problem was that Norway really didn't pick up from that then. Martin Sjögren, who was the coach at the time, I think Martin made a big mistake by playing Julie Blackstone left back in that game. Most of England's goals came down the English right flank. They absolutely dominated them there to the point where I think I was shouting from the press box and you had to stop me at one point, you know. But they never really righted that. And and then at the World Cup, they were very underwhelming. I can't understand how you can have Odda Hegerberg, you can have Gudrun Reiten, and you can have Caroline Graham Hansen in a team and not create more. Frida Mannum is in there. Inge Systad Engen is in there. Vilde Borisa started the first game on the bench and came in. I can't understand how you can play football with those players and not create. But I think that Gemma Granger coming in for Norway now is going to make a big difference. I think there's been a huge cultural shift. A lot of the players would have been, they would have been sort of, you know, come through together at LSK, one of the big Norwegian teams who sort of fallen off a little little bit in recent times. I think maybe 5 or 6 or 7 of them played the World Cup in France, you know. So they've changed tack a little bit and they've looked that little bit better. But I think mentally they really need to get over this idea. Sweden have kind of gotten over it, that the game has passed them by a little bit, and they've started to claw back Germany, the USA, Canada, despite losing the Olympic final on penalties to Canada a couple of years back. Sweden's mentality is now up there that, okay, these are the things we have to do. I think there was a sort of an expectation from Norway for a while that just because they had such a great history in the women's game, they were always going to be there or thereabouts. And I'm sorry, that's just not how it works. And if England are to rest on their laurels in the same way now, the same thing will happen to them. You have to keep developing. You have to keep moving forward. And that was kind of missed for a little while there with Norway.
No, I think you're spot on, and I'm excited to see how Gemma Granger does. My partner Bethy's a scout for the Welsh national team, so she's worked with Gemma for the last couple of years. And obviously having played at Reading, where pretty much the whole team is from the Welsh national team, they were hugely positive about her as a manager, the way that she dealt with players on a personal level, obviously tactically as well. She's come through the FA and all I've heard is positive things. You know, there's some big characters there that she's going to have to obviously manage as well. So I think that's going to be a challenge for her. But I think first and foremost, she treats people as human beings. And I think that's probably the most powerful thing, getting a happy camp again, you know, and then you've got the players there, you know, you've got the talent there. So yeah, I'm excited to see that progress. Both teams really, because you look at Sweden as well, dropping to 6th in the world. They're always competing though at major tournaments. They're always there or thereabouts in the finals. So no, it's great. And it's important, you know, you want to see those big nations up there challenging year in, year out.
One of the amazing things, Tash, was when you look at that Norway squad that they had at the last World Cup, right? And when they dropped Caroline Graham Hansen there, you mentioned Gemma's player management and treating people as individuals and that kind of thing. Caroline Graham Hansen is one of the most intelligent people you will ever meet, right? And she has this very, very strong sense of right and wrong. And you don't cross her, okay? She will accept absolutely anything you say as a coach, right? But the moment she feels that you are being unfair, you have lost her. And no coach in the world can afford to do that with a player of her caliber. Hege Riise managed to do it. And I remember sitting there, because I wasn't lucky enough to make it down to the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, but I remember sitting there as the team came out, I go, oh boy, I can't wait for the Mix Zone interviews after this, or the Flash Zone interviews after this. And sure enough, Caroline went absolutely bonkers about being dropped in the team, came on and did brilliantly when she did come on and that kind of thing. And that really was, their whole World Cup was over there. And there was all this talk of, you know, did all the Hegeby pull out of that game? No, all that was injured. Like herself and Caroline, they get on really well on the field, but, you know, they wouldn't exactly be boozing buddies off it. But, you know, they're winners. That's what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And I think the Gemma's big challenge, exactly as you say, Tash, is it's to get them all working together again. Because if you look at the midfield there, we mentioned Monum, Boerisa and Ingrid Sustad Engen. I don't think the Frida Monum and Ingrid Sustad Engen play well together. I think they're two absolutely brilliant players. I would never put them on the field as two central midfielders together. The balance just never works out. They never find that distance between themselves that they're comfortable with that another team can't play through. So there you have to change something. Who is it that has to sort of sacrifice themselves and go out onto a wing or drop down to centre back? You know, all of these questions are things that Gemma will have to address. Whereas I think on the flip side, Peter Gerhardsson over here in Sweden, who of course are going to be meeting my native Ireland in the group stages of the Nations League in the very near future, they're very much a team that's prepared to do absolutely anything. If you say to Yennefer Falk, okay, you're not playing in goal, you're playing number 9, she's just going to go straight up there and go, yeah, okay, launch the ball at me, I'm here to do that, you know. And that's absolutely key in international football, especially for smaller nations like Ireland, like Sweden, like Norway, where you don't have the 50 or 60 million people to choose from that you have there in the UK for England, for instance. You need people who are prepared to sacrifice things for the greater good. I think that's probably Gemma's biggest challenge.
While Sweden and Norway are tearing it up in the Champions League, and we've spoken about both of them on a national basis as well, before we let you go, I do need to speak about Denmark. Will they ever emerge to the potential that they have in some individuals? It's as if they've got a very strong half of a team, and then there's half that they're having to plug the gaps, which is the feeling that I've had for a while. But I liken them a little bit to Austria. You know, they've shown real potential at times, and they can be very difficult to break down.
they're really the untold story, if you like, of European women's football at the moment, right? Because they were really, really good in the past. But for some reason, they kind of took their eye off the ball, right? Whereas Norway and Sweden continue down the path of developing women's football. In Denmark, they have to compete with Olympic handball, which is a huge sport of girls down there. And, you know, you either play sort of football during the summer and then you play handball during the winter. And they've lost a lot of really talented athletes to that. And what you have now with Denmark is kind of like an hourglass where the top players that they have are among the best in the world, and the players then are sort of making up the rest of the squad aren't on the same level. And the difficulty then is finding a way of playing and a tempo to play at that all the players in the team can manage, because the biggest problem that Denmark have is that there's only one Pernilla Harder when they need at least two of them. You need one as the playmaker and one as the striker in the box kind of thing. You know, that's not likely. You know, we're not likely to clone Pernilla anytime soon. So what they really need to do is they need to put the same development to their own league that has happened in Norway and Sweden, right? I'm not saying they don't invest money. Obviously, clubs, they invest money and they invest time and they invest resources. They need to do more. Kyrgia and the likes of that, they need to be in the Champions League to give the girls that experience. Because what's happening is they're playing together at under 15, under 17, under 19. They're meeting each other in club football and the best are meeting the best. And then they're getting dispersed either to academies in England or to Sweden or to Norway or to, you know, college programs in the US. And they're lacking then that red thread that's going through the game in Denmark the way that it currently is in Sweden and in Norway. They managed to hold them together for much longer so that the best players grow together. And I think the last coach who was there, I remember him saying the same thing, that was the big problem, was that hourglass thing where the gulf in competence is just a little bit too much. It's absolutely not unsolvable, Lindsay. I think with the right sort of plan in place and giving these girls the game time that they need in their domestic environment, I do think they have the ability to become a feeder league like Sweden or like Norway.
It's brilliant to hear, because one of my best friends is Caroline Rask. I don't know if you know her. She used to play for Fortuna and AC Milan. And yeah, so obviously I'm very good friends with like Sina Brun and Caroline Müller, who play at Real Madrid now. But it's the same, hearing their story of how they all grew up at Fortuna for 10, 15 years. But then again, now none of them would want to go back home because the league's just not strong enough. And I see that a lot. I see that in a lot of countries now. I think Australia's the same. I think you're going to struggle to get your big names back there. So I do. But I just think, yeah, you're spot on with Denmark. It is. It's fascinating to hear. So thank you.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sometimes the transition to fall and winter feels like experiencing every season on the same day. The shoes in the Allbirds Mizzle collection were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Check off your errands with the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Wool Runner Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.